It's Sunday, January the 3rd, 2021. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley and Shelley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, hello, and welcome to the first podcast of 2021. I have not shared many podcasts here on this channel. This channel started in 2005, and I have not given it up, but have been podcasting weekly with my friend Jason Neifer on the EdTech Situation Room. And today we're going to record a podcast that we actually brainstormed at the beginning of winter break on December the 19th. I have a yellow legal pad here that's got a whole bunch of notes, and we're about to head back to school tomorrow and get back into the swing of things after a delightful two-week break where we have thankfully been COVID-free and been able to be home with our children and our dogs and have a good Christmas. So, hello, Shelley. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. It's great to be here with you, Wesley Fryer.
Thank you for doing this with me. What was the highlight of the holiday for you before we get into the school stuff?
Well, I think the highlight of the holiday for me was just having permission to be lazy. If that is, I love the time with our family. I love the time with our children. I enjoyed the snow. I guess if you have to say one highlight, it was the snow. Mm-hmm. Having the snow.
We had a great snowstorm.
January, what, 1st?
Yeah, we had a ice and snowstorm that came on New Year's Eve, and then a week before Christmas holiday started, we actually had a lovely snow as well. Mm-hmm. And then we had an ice storm in October. So this has been quite the winter for us in Central Oklahoma.
And I took the opportunity to take a few of the more Christmassy decorations, but I'm going to leave a lot of my winter or greenery that remind me of the mountains. So I like leaving some things up through, going back to school. So anyway, I feel refreshed and I feel ready to go back.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk today about lessons learned teaching during the pandemic, because as we were just sitting here reflecting and I was like, is it really only since last summer I stopped, being our director of technology? It's, in some ways seemed like a really long semester, but it's for me been fantastic in so many different ways. There have been some things that have been hard, but there's just a lot of really good things as well. Pardon me. I'm going to choke. No, I'm not. I'm just going to cough.
Please don't choke.
No, I'm just going to cough. So before we get into our lessons learned, let's summarize for people just sort of where we're at with our teaching and our educational roles at this stage of life as we start 2021.
I have been teaching STEM or science for the past 2 years, third grade.
Well, not just science, though. You call it STEM.
I call it STEM. And so
you're the coding teacher.
And yes, because I like to extend into engineering design processes. I like to extend into coding, and I try to, do a well-rounded content that way. This is the second year using the Amplify Science curriculum.
In third grade.
And so I've really enjoyed kind of knowing ahead of time what I'm going to be teaching and having had done it before. And so enjoying it, sharing that with a new group of students. Last year, I felt like I was just kind of learning along with the students, which is something I always try to do. But it is nice to at least know where I'm going and what direction. So I'm looking forward to doing that. I miss my after-school clubs. I have always taught some extra after-school clubs, and I've really missed spending that time getting to know students from other grades because I stick pretty much only with our third graders. We have about 56 third graders that I'm responsible for teaching, and we are and have been face-to-face since August.
14th.
Wow. And so I know that we're in a different, unique situation in regards to that. And so our students continue to rotate to four different teachers. We're departmentalized. And so I do see all of the third graders. The students stay together in their pods, so they're not playing or interacting with the other third grade students, only the ones in their immediate classroom. But I do get to see all of the students. So we're getting to go back to a week. We've had a couple weeks of remote learning because of quarantining. But this week we will go back into a week of quarantine before we actually go back face to face. And so I'm gearing up for that.
It's been a year and a half since I was tech director, because I had a year of instructional coaching and then teaching my fifth and sixth grade media literacy up in the lab.
Right.
So it has. It's been a year and a half. Things are seems a little blurred sometimes. But I was our director of technology for 4 years, starting in July of 2015, and then was able to make a pivot to academics and become our school's instructional technology and innovation specialist, which meant doing half-time instructional coaching with teachers and then also teaching four classes, which are two different courses, our fifth grade media literacy and our sixth grade media literacy classes, which used to just be called computer classes, but I call them media literacy classes. This year, this last semester, I've also been teaching introductory Spanish. So because of a teacher who was having a baby and out on maternity leave and other kinds of staffing situations, normally half of our fifth grade take Spanish in the fall and half take French, and then they flip in the spring. We're on a trimester schedule, but this is one class that we do for a semester. And so anyway, I actually only have four more days left. We're going to be, as Shelley said, going back remote, and then we're going to hopefully be back face-to-face with students again. The hope is that if students have traveled and been exposed to COVID, that they'll show symptoms at home, and then by having a week basically of quarantine for everybody, students won't be bringing that back to school, and we can have a safe return face-to-face with everybody. So anyway, I have been teaching two sections of Spanish, but that's been a class that meets pretty much every day. We're on like a rotating A through F schedule, so every day I just have to look at my calendar to see exactly what I'm teaching. I pretty much, I think, maybe almost have got my schedule worked out as far as how everything is rotating. But it has been wonderful and delightful, and we'll talk about that. So let's get into this. You're going to have to stop using the Nextdoor app and texting.
I can still listen and hear. I'm ready.
Shelley, what have you learned teaching during the pandemic?
I've learned the importance. I really have learned the importance of helping our students become independent learners. It's always been something that I have told myself and told my students that our goal is for third graders, especially, is to learn to be an independent student. But I have learned how important that is during this pandemic. Students are adjusting to new ways of content delivery. Students are adjusting to not maybe receiving as much one-on-one help as they're used to. Students are, you know, in and out of remote learning.
We call it flex learning.
And they need to be independent at home.
We have kids that can opt for long-term flex, mm-hmm. staying at home, and you've had a few of those. But then we've got kids, because of exposure to COVID or positive tests, they end up having to be home and quarantine, a short-term flex.
And so I have learned how important that is. And so I think part of the way to prepare students to be independent is to give them opportunities to be independent. Mm-hmm. And so I have tried to build lessons and activities where they have to take charge of their own learning. That's kind of my mantra. And that I am here as their resource and their guide. And so I've learned the importance of that.
And I think this spring, when we were emergency, in what I like to call our emergency remote learning mode, where we all we're locked down and just all of a sudden, you know, hey, everybody's a distance learning teacher now. Not really, but, you know, it was remote learning. It was emergency remote learning. I realized how much hand-holding and sometimes coddling I do with kids. And it just made me see myself, because it's so easy when a student asks, just, oh, here, do this, do this, do this. You know, rather than being Socratic, rather than saying, well, what do you think? Well, what have you tried? I mean, that's a longer engagement with a student to ask them to think themselves about where they can go next. And I've talked for a long time about being a navigational versus a procedural learner. But I saw, especially during the remote learning with my kids struggling, and then with me not being able to be there, giving them the kind of assistance I usually would, at just how, I mean, some people will say be less helpful. And I saw how I need to, you know, Eric Sappington, who is our 7th and 8th grade makerspace teacher, calls it kids knowing what to do when they don't know what to do.
Right.
And that's so important. And I think of it as being a navigational learner, being able to navigate so that you can figure out what it is that you need to do and how to do it. Not that you're never going to have a question, but not to be a helpless learner. And I think that through the emergency remote learning time of the spring, and to a lesser extent, you know, now we haven't had to be remote at all. We've had kids and a very, very few number of teachers.
I was remote for a week.
You were. That's right. The whole third grade went remote for a week. And we've had our whole high school go remote. I mean, the whole school hasn't gone remote, but we've had groups, grade levels. Right. And in the case of the high school, the whole high school went for a while. And then individual, you know, teachers. But it really was that time of emergency remote learning, becoming aware of how I was just being too helpful and not being Socratic enough and probably not empowering students to be independent learners and taking charge of their own learning to the degree that I say I want them to. And I think the pandemic revealed that to me and then has made me think about what I do and how I do it. It's, you know, I enjoy helping kids answer questions and telling them what to do, right? It's like you're Thomas the Train Engine. You're a useful engine. You're helping them, you know, see what to do and click on. But ultimately that can be kind of an enabling behavior as a teacher for the student to remain helpless and to be less independent. And we kind of do that to the detriment of our students' long-term independent learning capacity, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm using the right words for all that. But basically, I'm glad to have had to become more aware of that and to think about it. And it's something I'm talking to Eric about, we've talked about, and I want to keep being challenged about is, am I being too helpful? You know, how can I respond to students and empower them so that they're not lost, they're not just, oh, I don't know what to do, you know, so that they have some ideas about how to proceed and how to help themselves learn when the teacher's not right there to answer their question.
And I think a big part of that is preparing the students for that,
mm-hmm.
is that you really have to be intentional about how you're creating your lessons, building in choice, you know, so that they can choose something that they're comfortable with or that they know how to do. I think it's really important to practice those skills and to, you know, I have had many conversations with my students and look, this is what I'm going to ask you. I'm not just going to not help you. I mean, I'm going to ask you, what have you tried? What have you talked to a friend? You know, so I want to prepare them for that ahead of time so that they know why I'm not jumping in to help them.
Right.
You know,
you want to talk a little bit about that, because in the weeks leading up to Christmas break, you sort of started to gear up. Did that start when you went remote for that week, or how did that work when you sort of went into I'm preparing you for remote learning. I'm designing the lessons a little bit differently. Yeah. When did that happen?
It actually, when we became one-to-one, I mean, we were one of the last grade levels to get our learning devices. And so we spent most of our time in the beginning of the year without a digital device.
When did that happen? When did you, in their iPads, when did you get your iPads?
I don't remember, but it was
September, October?
Yeah, I mean, late into the year. And I'm kind of glad for that, because I set up some, like taking notes in a notebook. We did a lot of note taking. We did a lot of preparation of what does this look like, so that when we did get our digital devices, we didn't just start using it right away. We had some other skills,
kind of scaffolded the skills
that we had been working on. So now it made taking notes by watching a video a lot easier to do because they had been doing it already. So, but anyway, when we got our digital devices, I think my number one goal was to teach them what it looks like to do assignments on the iPad. And that's not just watching a video or doing a IXL or, you know,
it's not just computer-aided instruction and things that you jump into, log in, and do the exercises.
Yes. And I wanted to train them on using Seesaw, which is the way that I am using my lesson delivery.
But it's also your interactive platform. It's the learning journal that students are keeping to show what they know and to have a running record of what they've done to communicate with parents.
So I wanted them to be independent. So, and plus, I mean, I was having to prepare lessons for remote students at the same time I'm preparing lessons for my face-to-face students. And so rather than just do two types of lessons, I did one type of lesson and everybody got the same thing. You know, my face-to-face students got the benefit of me being in the room with them to help them, to question them and interact with them. But my students at home were also getting at least the same content that my face-to-face students were. Anyway.
I want to get back to this list, but, you know, as we record this, here we are in the middle of the pandemic. The vaccine is out. My parents just got the first dose yesterday up in Kansas. You know, we're hoping here as teachers, you know, hopefully we'll get it in maybe February, certainly before spring break. It's wild. We're living through history. What's it been like to have kids at home whose parents are expecting and whose they're expecting a full learning experience, and you have kids in the classroom, and you're having to wear a mask and be social? What's all that been like to juggle all of that and to deal with the demands and the expectations on you in this pandemic?
That's a big question. I think I have adjusted differently than maybe other teachers because I have had experience teaching with one-to-one devices. I have been intentional about using my device as a tool, not as a substitute for a teacher. And by that meaning teaching the students how to make and create media, using one of your words, to show what we know. And so hopefully teaching them to empower them to do that. And, you know, I found Seesaw, the learning journal, several years ago. So it wasn't a new thing.
And our whole school has been using Seesaw. I mean, we use Google Classroom for middle school and high school. We have a separate information system that we have to put in middle and high school grades and comments in lower school and primary. But everyone from K through third grade is all using Seesaw. And then teachers can use Seesaw, like I use it with my fifth graders.
I think some teachers, though, that came to it because of the pandemic are using it very differently.
Yeah.
Because they had to.
They're at a different stage of technology adoption.
I have used it to integrate. So
you're not just at an adoption level.
So anyway, and so for me, creating something that the kids can be independent was a big goal for me. And so, again, it goes back to that creating independent learners.
What's that like, though, as far as your expectations and dealing with time and dealing with just,
well,
I mean, would you say if normal school is at a 100, what has this been in terms of your expectation time?
I would say 150.
Time?
I mean, you know, it takes me many hours to prepare lessons. I usually front load mine, so I'll spend many hours all at one time rather than just being able to maintain throughout the week. And so I have relied on, like, my curriculum, Amplify Science, to kind of be my pacing guide, because we have to pace ourselves a little differently because of remote learning. You can't cover as much as quickly. There's less opportunities for classroom discussion and activity and working together with groups. I think that's really one of the things I miss, is that usually most of my content is delivered in participated in group, small group. And
because of social distancing, you haven't been able to do
that. Well, and materials. You know, we can't share materials without sanitizing in between and not having enough materials.
And every kid has their own box and their own bags of stuff, right?
So, I mean, and when they go home, all of that has been different. And so
it's led to instructional changes.
It instructional changes and challenges. And so that is time consuming, preparing those types of activities. But I really do enjoy the challenge of it. And sometimes one of my check boxes is save frequently, because my family has witnessed times that maybe I wasn't saving the work that I was working on
as a seesaw activity,
and then losing everything and then having to go back in and recreate. And that, can be disastrous because you lose all of your work. It's a little stressful. It happens a little quicker the second time, but it's frustrating. So I think we really have to be clear on the fluff. I mean, there's no room for fluffy learning. I mean, you have to be intentional, but you also can't just be intentional. Doesn't mean it has to be like, I still want to add in an art activity or, we're creating a hands-on activity. And so that's not fluff, but you also have to be intentional about why you're doing it. There has to be a real purpose. And so that, I think having a really intentional instructional goal is critical as well to maximize the time that you do have with students. Also, parents. I mean, I am very fortunate that our daughter is in high school and is an independent learner. I see these very highly capable, I set a high bar expectation for my third graders in the classroom, and then I send them home and all of a sudden they're helpless and they don't know how to do things and their parents are frustrated. So parents, I've also had to learn a whole new set of tools and things, and students who are really struggling with parents who are teachers, and I it's challenging, you know, it's challenging for parents, it's challenging for the students, it's challenging for the teachers, it's frustrating for all of us. However, I think through those struggles, students are gaining more confidence in their abilities. Hopefully parents are seeing their students as more capable than sometimes they portray themselves to be. I think it's been awesome for students to have, or parents to have, a window into what their students are learning at home and what they are capable of, the level of independence or lack of independence, you know, because I know there are some parents that are like, wow, yeah, the teacher's been saying that they struggle with this. Now I see what the teacher's talking about, you know?
I want to talk about Spanish and some of the things I've loved and seen and, you know, thought about and whatever. And I've got some ideas about that. But as you have heard me, you know, talk about teaching and students in class this year, what have you noticed? What do you think has been different for me teaching Spanish as well as my media literacy classes this year?
Well, what I love the most is you are foremost a teacher. And again, you're not just using technology for technology's sake. You're teaching Spanish. However, you teach Spanish in a fun way that has gotten the students engaged, you know, whether it's through Minecraft or scratch coding and I think that rather than just memorizing Spanish words or, you know, taking a quiz or whatever, I think you have made Spanish something fun, but also using the things that students like to do. It's engaging.
One of the best things was that our language department chair, Lynn Robertson, introduced me to Comprehensible Input, or CI, which is a relatively new pedagogy for language learning and language acquisition, but it's wonderful. And the basic philosophy is that, you know, young children, as well as older, don't learn a language by having an assigned vocabulary list and having a test on Friday. They learn it by being immersed in meaningful, simple, and slow enough uses of the language that they can begin to apprehend and understand those phrases and those words, and then eventually use them themselves. And so this has really been a very liberating experience, and I just do love instructional autonomy. I think we both do, although it can be challenging, you know, when you're having to create all of your own lessons and design everything. And in fact, I've still thought about dabbling in some teachers pay teachers with some of the things that I've put together. Like, I've never put anything out there before. And I know you use teachers pay teachers. A number of our teachers do. I don't know how many do. That'd be an interesting survey to do, actually. But the dialogue projects we've done, having, you know, we've done movie talks where originally I asked my kids their favorite movies and I was going to use those, but so many of them were just not appropriate. I went it with just Pixar. So we're just using Pixar movies, but we've done, you know, Coco and Incredibles and Cars and Moana. And you take these little, usually 4 or 5 minute clips, turn the volume down, and then just start talking about, you know, what we're seeing, what's happening. And then we've built vocabulary lists from that. And then students have done activities with those, and we've done several scratch projects where initially students just made speech bubbles, kind of like a comic book, and so they have their characters talk and use some of their vocabulary. And then for this culminating project that we're finishing up this week, they've done both speech bubbles and they've recorded their voices. And in this project, in English and Spanish. And I have absolutely loved just having, well, number one, teaching content. So we're not just teaching skills and the technology, but, you know, we're teaching content. We're learning, you know, how to express ideas with Spanish and how to say different things and how to use vocabulary. And so that's been wonderful. But the freedom to be able to have so much time, because even in my media literacy classes, I mean, the most I'll do for a unit is usually 4 or 5 lessons. But, you know, we've had these ongoing projects where in some cases we've done other things, but we've got this project we're working on and we'll go back to it. And it's just been wonderful to just have such freedom. And it's a lovely, if you haven't taught language before and you speak another language, you know, consider doing that. I mean, it just, and of course, everyone's different. Some people are going to be handed a textbook and a curriculum and say, here, this is what you have to teach. And we do have a textbook, and I did feel a little kind of pressure at the beginning in terms of using it. And we used it a little bit, but it's proven to just be so much fun. And I love how much my kids have loved their projects, and they're loving Spanish, you know, which is really the bottom line. I mean, the bottom line to this class is let's introduce kids to the Spanish language so that they'll enjoy it and like it and want to choose it to study more. Because after fifth grade, they choose either French or Spanish, and then they'll continue to study that. And then, you know, at some point they just, it's not required, but that they have to take a certain amount. So anyway, I've really enjoyed that opportunity to have such instructional freedom, you know, to help them, you know, make meaning from Spanish, and then to use media in compelling ways. And that's been a lot of fun.
Well, and it has helped you develop your Spanish skills.
Yes.
I mean, you have grown your Spanish skills and having to speak it every day.
Well,
and,
honestly, that was one of the hard things with recording. So later this year, we ended up, you know, having more kids being at home. And it reached a point maybe a month and a half ago or something where I didn't just have a couple kids at home. I had a lot. And I just decided, well, I'm going to start lesson casting. I'm going to start connecting live every single class and recording. And then it wouldn't matter, you know, whether the kids are there or not. They'll be able to, if they can, tune in live which isn't required for us. But if they want to, they can, or they can, you know, watch the lesson afterwards. But honestly, teaching Spanish, especially initially, I mean, it can be intimidating to be recorded in general when you're like, you have no idea who's going to watch that, your parents going to. Mm-hmm. And then with the grammar, I mean, I've never tried to pretend like I can speak perfect grammar, you know. You can get into conditional, imperfect, like these different verb tenses, which I have ideas about how to express them, but it's not going to sound perfect. And so I definitely felt intimidated myself, which is a little odd for me, because usually I'm jump with both feet into technology and in terms of recording myself, because I'm like, I don't want to sound like an idiot. And so, you know, and I don't know that I did, but no. I felt conspicuous because I knew everything I'm saying is not exactly perfect, you know,
well,
grammatically.
I think that has helped me when, I mean, teaching at the school we do, we have a lot of languages. And so I think it's helped me realize how difficult, you know, language and grammar and all of that can be to access and acquire. And so I think it's great to not be perfect. I think we need to embrace not being perfect,
sure,
because that just shows you're making the effort to try and to learn from that. And
you want to be competent.
Yes, do. But hey.
Yeah. Well, and so on a technical note, I'll include a link to this in the show notes, but our school has piloted several different, you know, live streaming, video conferencing tools. We've got this system called an OWL that one of our sixth grade teachers has used quite a bit. I was able to borrow from our upper division math department that had tried it out a little bit, the system called a Swivel. It's about a $1,300 piece of equipment that you put an iPad on. The wonderful thing about it, and the best reason I use it, is because of the microphone. So it has 5 different wireless microphones, one that you wear as the teacher, and then 4, up to 4, that you can put around the room so that the remote students can hear the other students in the class. One of the things we bought early on in the pandemic were some portable microphones that we could wear, which are really a little jicky because they can howl and make noises.
They screech,
yeah, depending on if you put the microphone too close to the unit. It's a battery pack speaker that you clip to your belt or your waist. And when I was wearing the cloth masks, because we're 100% masked at school, right, except for eating, you know, the mask is on for everybody, teachers and students, all the time. And initially, when I was using the cloth masks, it muffled my voice so much more. I finally tried the disposable medical masks and really found that to be much better from a breathability standpoint and then a volume standpoint as well. So anyway, I don't wear mine as much. But anyway, I'll include a link to this in the show notes because there's a lot of steps. There's like 20 or 30 steps probably that I end up following. And I have it. I finally ordered this cable off Amazon to be able to use Google Meet with this, but I've had to use Zoom for that. And anyway, it's required a bunch of steps. But now, once I figured that out and got that practiced and rehearsed, you know, that's been good. I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out how many of my students have actually watched any of those recordings. I don't know if they are. I mean, it's easy to be overwhelmed with so much content and so much to do. But I've definitely had wonderful experiences with kids connecting live, and we've been doing things like Kahoot, and there's other kinds of quizzing. Oh gosh, my brain's been on holiday, so I'm not thinking about those as much. But yeah, there's several other. Well, there's Quizlet, but then there's another one that they like even better.
Might.
We were doing just before Christmas.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of it. I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, it's been fun to let kids live and synchronously participate. Mm-hmm. The most beautiful example of that was my sixth graders, who all the sixth graders have iPads. And I actually was able to have some students. It's weird because with this setup, I can hear them in my ear on a earbud. But because of echo and whatever, the kids in the room can't hear them, but I had a student who was teaching and sharing their screen from home over Zoom with their iPad, And this is when we were talking about blogging. And anyway, that was really cool. I mean, that was like kind of a peak moment.
Well, I think that in one of my check boxes over here we can check off is maintaining student community. And I think whether students are learning at home and they're full term flex or whether they're in flex learning for a short amount of time, I think it's really important for us to continue building and promoting student community. And so having Absolutely. A student who is at home learning, being able to participate in class activities and discussions, I think that's huge. Mm-hmm. I am not a, finding the right balance between how much FaceTime to have with students. And I am glad that we have had the opportunity to be face-to-face. It's just so much easier to build community that way. But I think being very intentional, to use that word again, about how we're building community with our students, both inside and outside of the classroom, is hugely important during this time, because we do know that isolation is hard and being separated from your friends is hard. Mm-hmm. And there are so many other factors. You know, school, yes, is important. Academics absolutely is important. However, I think the student's social and emotional well-being is more important.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason why teaching remote, it's so important to reduce our expectations of covering the content, because you're not going to be able to effectively cover as much material. And you really don't want to, because you want to save some time for that SEL, for that socio-emotional Right. learning, for those check-ins. And that's something that I have heard and been told, but I've also experienced it. And I was thinking about this today. So the ISTE conference finally happened in December, and I had a session that was, you know, accepted. We were going to go out there. We were going to fly to Anaheim, mm-hmm. you know, in the summer and be out there. And of course, school was still going on, but I did not get a lot out of ISTE. I still need to go in and access, and you know, some sessions, but this summer, I had three different professional development conferences that I participated in. The Mountain Moot that was out of Montana, the week-long Summer Institute in Digital Literacy, and then we have a program that's called MSON, which is the Malone Schools Online Network. It's out of Stanford. And they opened up their conference to anyone who wanted to be a part of it, I guess, at member schools. And anyway, I think it was a three-day conference. But at each one of those, there was immediacy and there was connection, and I had these interactions with different people over time. And in some cases, like for the Digital Institute and Media Literacy, I had been in Rhode Island last summer. No, not last summer. The summer before last. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
It was last summer. It was the COVID summer. So I had already built relationship with people. And so that's always a great thing when you have built relationship and community face to face, just like you're saying with kids in the classroom. But yeah, that's a huge, huge important mm-hmm. thing that is not just true during a pandemic or during a time of remote learning, but building community, having time for people to share, check-in times, you know? I'm looking forward, because Google Meet has been upgraded since the spring to allow for breakout rooms. So I'm going to be using breakout rooms with my fifth and sixth graders this week, for the first time in a remote setting. I have practiced this with my students, in the classroom before. And part of what that really helped me realize, especially for my fifth graders, and many of them are on very old Chromebooks, is just how hard it is to multitask and with multiple windows mm-hmm. on this little 11-inch screen with this small little, I mean, hopefully it has 4 gigs of RAM, but it's a very underpowered old Chromebook. That's helped me think about my own instructional expectations for students, and to try to just not have things very complicated as far as like lots of windows to juggle and things like that. All right. What else do we have? You wrote number 2, not to worry. Support emotional needs of teammates. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, It has been harder to be connected with people, harder than ever.
Even with teachers at school.
Even with teachers at school, even being face to face. Most people stay. It's fear, but I mean, it's well-being. You have to be isolated from people, you know?
The more you're with people, the more you put yourself at risk. There is,
whether you're, you know, fearful of that or not. It's just, in your own classroom by yourself, you can take your mask off. Mm-hmm. And then, so it's also freedom, you know? So I think I have, and I don't know about anybody else, but I assume that a lot of people stay to themselves more. And I am a people person, and I miss being around people. But at the same time, we have so many things that we need to do. And then wearing a mask is uncomfortable. And so it's nice to not have to wear it. So the only time you're safe to do that's when you're by yourself. So I just feel like it's always, there's that pressure when you're at school or when you're in public that you feel not safe, you know?
And that's overarching everything, it is. Right? That's something that you don't escape that. Mm-hmm.
And so having the community to go in and just, hey, you know, what can we do to help so-and-so? Or what are you planning for next week? Or just those conversations, team meetings, you know, the dreaded team meeting, you know. But I think I miss those. I miss just having. So now, you know, either you have them over Zoom, which is fine. I mean, Zoom is wonderful. I mean, in a variety of different ways. But it's just, I don't know, just the tediousness of that and the isolation of that. And I would much rather, you know, get together and laugh and support each other and I don't know.
Well, and you have made some socially distant connections like that with some friends, especially early on.
Right.
You know, out in the patio or being able to do some of that. I think we definitely have missed community. I've enjoyed being able to be a part of the language department. Mm-hmm. You know, it's talk about being isolated and alone. Like, being on our technology department, like, we've had a, quote, technology team. And as I was tech director, got us together sometimes. I think those times were very important. But it's pretty easy to be isolated and to not feel connected. Mm-hmm. And even with, you know, Lauren, who worked with me for 3 of my 4 years as tech director, you know, our relationship was important, being a team together. And we can't undervalue the importance of that. With colleagues and also with students, it is really, really important. And I think, I don't know that we're even aware ourselves all the time how different things weigh on us and what a difference things make. But I've definitely enjoyed being a part of the language team. You know, we've met, what, once maybe as a computer science department this year. But you know, those kinds of connections are important. I hope as I get to pivot more back into my instructional coaching role that I'll find ways to be able to build that kind of community. We've been doing several different Google certification trainings, and we have a little group that's met. We had our Seesaw iPad pilot project the last couple of years that met and had a little bit of community there. And so I think those dynamics are important to recognize and try to continue to build those in, whether we're teaching students or we're working with teachers. Talk a little bit about cohorts at recess and new friends.
I think that's one of the more positive things that's come out. So we have our germ cohort and so each class stays together, and usually
limit the mixing.
The mixing. So we still have all of second grade and all of third grade. So that's 8 classes that go to recess all at the same time. But so we've divided out our play space into 8 different areas. And then we rotate through those areas. So we're playing side by side with another classroom. We can see them and wave to them and whatever, but there's no contact. between the classes. And so my kids have loved, oh, it's big toy day, or oh, today we get the swings, oh, today we get the soccer field, and so, or the basketball court.
You guys have more fully utilized your space because you are forced to be creative in a new space.
Yes.
That's interesting.
And that's been nice, but the students really miss playing with their friends. But, you know, we're at a very small school, and some of these kids have been in the same, their same friend group from pre-K class and not gotten out of their friend group, you know? And so this year, they know the students in their classrooms, but I wouldn't say that they would have on a normal year played with these students. And so they've had the opportunity to branch out, to make new friends, to play games with others where, you know, it's interesting, you know, I have a group that would play football every single day of the year, you know, which they still do, but they're not playing with the same people they would have normally played with. And other, because it's not normal year, you know, other people have come in to play football or to swing or to make friends that would never have done that, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of mixed, roll the dice and shook up the basket.
So I know the kids miss getting together with some of their other friends, but at the same time, it's been such a good thing to watch them band together and make friends with each other and make friends with new people who, honestly, I don't think they ever would have if they hadn't been forced to stay within their germ cohort.
And you had a parent just reach out, didn't you, at the end of the year of how – or the end of the semester, how happy they were about their child who was new to the school.
Oh, yeah. Bonding. I have three new students in my classroom of 15 students.
Who are new to Cassidy.
Who are new to Cassidy. And so, and it has been wonderful for them in bonding and making friends because they are with, you know, these same groups. And, yeah, they, it's like they've been here their whole lives now with the friends that they've made. And
maybe the intensity of the bonding has been different because of how you guys have been. The constraints have been different.
Whereas sometimes new kids to Cassidy go out to recess, and because everybody plays with the same people they have since pre-K, sometimes get left out. And so it's been really awesome, you know, instead of having 56 kids on the playground and you have to go find somebody to play with, you have the there's only 15 kids, you know,
who you've been working with
in a classroom with quite closely. And so, I mean, it definitely has had its challenges. We're as much like a family as anybody, and sometimes a family member gets on your nerve, and you know, and so sometimes it is a struggle. And I tell you, I haven't preached kindness, be kind to each other, you know, all year long. And if anything, we're going to learn that how important it is to be kind and to have patience and with each other, because we have definitely had many opportunities to work together and be together. And so, but as any other family, we love each other and we move forward and forgive each other. In fact, I had two boys that had a lot of trouble getting along in the beginning of the year, and they just, it was really a struggle. And so we had many conversations, and now they're best friends, you know, because they've worked through that and they've been able to, find other places where they do get along, you know? And so that's been really good too. So.
Something I wrote down on my list that is like you'd think a basic thing, but the value of seating charts.
Yes, so, that's so,
so
true.
So last year, I mean, I maybe sometimes want to give kids choices to a fault. And in terms of just, hey, sit wherever you want, you guys can change and da-da-da, I mean, that makes it challenging for you as a teacher just learning names. And so because this is like externally imposed constraints of the school, we have to have kids sitting in the same desks, seating charts. We got to know, you know, if kids were together. This actually changed during the year. It used to just be, did you have, let me make sure I get this right.
Contact.
Did you have direct contact less than 6 feet away for more than 15 minutes at a time, at a stretch? That then changed to cumulative. So had you cumulatively had more than 15 minutes of contact? But, you know, we're so fortunate and blessed at our school, and this is part of the reason for the Spanish teaching as well, we had to reduce class sizes. And so I'm pretty sure I might have 14 in one of my classes, but usually I'm like 10 or 12 students, which is so gloriously ideal, right? It's that is a real dream. And I don't think there haven't been many years of our lives where either of us have taught, you know, with that kind of a situation. But anyway, it has been wonderful because of those seating charts. I have been able to learn my kids' names so much faster and using their names. And of course, this is like basic teaching 101. It should be. But it is so important to know all the names of your students and to use their names. And that is something that was an aha for me. And I think going out of the pandemic, even when it's over with, I mean, I've still let my kids pick their seats, but I'm like, okay, this is it, you know, and we did a flip. Mm-hmm. We switched around about halfway through Spanish, and I told them that was coming, that they could choose a different desk. But I don't know, you'd think I would be smarter than that and to know that already, but it was something that was externally imposed upon us, and it was like, oh, thank you, this is wonderful. I either forgot or didn't remember, you know, how valuable this can be to have the seating chart. And I'm, you know, I get new kids each trimester, so that's a little bit different, but not with Spanish. Spanish has stayed the same, but with a media literacy, that's changed with fifth and sixth grade. So,
anyway. Well, my students get to choose their seats each week. So, they can choose. And I do think there is value in that too, but I have noticed that we are creatures of habit. And so a lot of times they sit next to somebody who they're comfortable with.
Sure.
And I think that's important. I think I've always been a proponent of voice and choice in the classroom. But I do think it's even more important this year, is to let them have some freedom to make some choices for themselves. That's just empowering. And I just think the more that we can do to give them a sense of control, because so many things are out of their control.
Sure, yeah.
And that's fine. And the kids know better than I do. And then, you know, I make it a real purpose to greet my students by name each day. I mean, that's the social skills that we still need to, those need to be taught and, you know,
you greet them at the door.
I greet them at the door by name, and I have them look me in the eye. And I think that's important. And it's not just a coercive thing. I do think they need to learn how to speak to adults and look each other in the eye. And, you know, that is an important skill to have. But also, I want them to know that I see them mm-hmm. each day. I see them. I see you.
Yeah.
And so often students are overlooked, even in small classes of 12. Yeah. Right. There are some students that just go overlooked.
Well, we've become aware of this. I've become more aware of this with remote. Like, is a student going to go through class and not say anything the whole class?
Yes.
Today in our adult Sunday school class, I think this is the first time we've done this. I had everybody share something that was special or memorable about this Christmas, but then tag someone else. And we went around, and there were 11 of us, I guess. But like, that itself is important. And you mentioned coercive. I thought about this too. One of the things that's really interesting about, you know, teaching our adult Sunday school class is, like, I have very few expectations. Like, I don't even think anybody else does the reading. I think maybe one other person has bought the book and is reading along. But, like, there's no homework, and adults a lot of times are very reticent to share, especially digitally, but then even speaking up in class. I mean, that's something it's cultivated over time, hopefully, where people, you know, feel safe, and I record the lesson, but I don't record our table talk time. But anyway, I was reflecting on that today because, like, in class, I can be coercive. I tell my kids, with sixth grade, we're blogging with Write About. You know, they must share their posts, at least with our class. They have a choice of whether to share it publicly or not. But, you know, I'm there's a different level of coercion in terms of expectation with, you know, the kids in school, you know, versus the adults in church or Sunday school. Anyway, that's interesting. All right, so I want to wrap this up here in the next 8 minutes or so, because we're using this Ferrite program, which actually only lets us record for an hour, but that's probably good because we've been going for 53 minutes here. the closing question I want to have that you can think about is what lessons learned do you feel like you want to take into the post-pandemic time? Because people have talked about how, hey, this is a chance to reboot education and do things differently. You know, what, if anything, do you think you'll do differently as a result? But before you answer that, I wrote down some of the units that I've really enjoyed teaching this year that were different. Last year, they really hadn't done any of the units that besides keyboarding, they hadn't done any of them. And so I basically had the same curriculum for fifth and sixth grade. So this year I've created a new curriculum for the sixth graders, and the family oral history project that we've done has been wonderful. That was something that we were just gearing up for before the break. And so hopefully students did their interviews with a family member over the break. They'll be finishing those up soon. I did a unit on conspiracy theories, which we ended up looking at the moon landing, because a lot of even adults still have questions about whether the United States ever landed on the moon in 1969. And conspiracy theories are rampant. And they're also fascinating and interesting. And there's a level of entertainment there and enjoyment. But we can be very susceptible to misinformation. In fact, I like saying this now. My two favorite technology sayings are, video is the pencil of the 21st century, mm-hmm. and we live in the age of disinformation. Because with social media and the ways in which the information landscape has changed in the past 5 to 10 years plus, like, it is the perfect storm for disinformation, misinformation, malinformation. We live in a very polluted landscape. Hence, media literacy is important. So anyway, even though these are sixth graders, I've really enjoyed grappling with that at a level that is hopefully developmentally appropriate. We haven't jumped into the rabbit hole of, you know, political, electoral, QAnon, you know, conspiracy theory. There's lots of different places, and now even with the vaccine, that it's manifesting. But anyway, I've really enjoyed diving into that, having the kids create media, and being able to have conversations around those things. So I'm going to ask you the carry through question. So
I know that's what I've been sitting here thinking about. That's why I gave you a
chance to think about what if anything do you think you will want to carry through? Let's envision for a moment that, you know, we're through the summer.
Well,
the vaccine is out, and maybe we're either normal or close to normal whenever that happens. What do you think you'll carry through in your teaching as a result of this experience?
I think I definitely want to have an opportunity for students to have an at-home option. Mm. You know, one of the challenges, you know, when students are sick or they're traveling, and, you know, not everybody can take their vacation at spring break. I mean, there are some families that have to travel, you know, when dad has a week off. And so we do have students that travel quite a bit or go on vacation, you know, anyway. So I think always having some type of flexible learning option mm-hmm. is not a bad thing. Right. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And also having an opportunity to do different types of homework. We have really, in third grade, tried to get away from your traditional homework here, do this worksheet and answer the odd numbers or whatever, by trying to make homework meaningful. Yes, they're still reading at night, and yes, they're practicing their math, but trying to make that so it's tailored to their needs, you know, and not just here, everybody's going to do this. It's like, no. So I think having some kind of flexible learning option for students, it will be important, whether it's homework or if they're sick or whatever. So I don't want it to be expected, but I think an option would be good. Also, I think just to really, as we go back in, appreciate being able to work with groups of students. And I think that's something we've really tried to continue, but to not ever take that for granted again, and make sure intentionality, I guess, being intentional about what we're learning and about how we're learning it, because no longer could we just rely on, well, I did this last year, I did this 2 years ago, we've always done it this way, but mm-hmm. but being intentional about the things that we're asking students to do, not just because we've done it for the past 10 years, but because it's right for this group of students. So seeing them as individuals and not just as every third grader we've ever taught before.
All right. I stopped and started again because I don't think we're going to be done in 2 minutes, but we'll not go much longer.
But that was mine.
That was good. I would say, you know, good pedagogy, good instruction. I mean, it's what you're saying here. Like, let's not just do the same things we've always done because we've always done them.
Right.
But being able to, you know, pause and reflect and think about how and why we're doing something. And then, you know, many teachers have been introduced to new tools. I mean, I've been able to get deeper into Scratch than I ever have been before. I mean, I want to help any language teacher that's interested in it use Scratch to help their kids do dialogue projects. I'm telling you, it is super awesome to be able to create little animations with speech bubbles and then record your voice and then have a chance to record it again. And anyway, it's just one of the ways I love Google tools, but one of the ways that they're limited has been in voice recording. That's one of the reasons our language department has embraced Seesaw in middle school and in high school with some teachers. And I think I want to continue to lean into those kinds of tools that really allow students, especially to record their voice and to be able to practice, mm-hmm. but then to be creative. Oh my gosh. It's so fun to be able to introduce students. In some cases, they've already been introduced, but to deepen their learning with Scratch, which is such an open-ended, low-bar, high-ceiling environment for creative storytelling and imagination. And so I think I want to lean more into that. And maybe we've talked about trying to go to the Scratch conference some mm-hmm. year, you know, at Harvard
that.
And
MIT.
Oh, yeah, it's at MIT. You did Project Zero at Harvard.
Correct.
2 summers ago. Which was wonderful as well. And we've talked about how that would be, you know, you'd mm-hmm. love to go back to that. And I'd love to attend that in person. But, you know, just good pedagogy.
Absolutely.
Because you don't find that everywhere. That's one of the great things about connecting with other teachers is the ability to find, you know, people who sort of are kindred spirits when it comes to different aspects of teaching and learning. And, you know, sometimes when you are back at your school and into the routine and into the grind, you know, you can lose that. And so I think that leaning into that good pedagogy, the choice in voice, the student creativity, the creating and making, you know, giving kids choices about how they show what they know, all that stuff is just really, really important. And that kind of pedagogy can coexist in a traditional school where that may not be the overall mantra. You know,
absolutely.
It may not be like, hey, this is what we all do, but you can still do that as a teacher. And being able to empower students, and that's been the number one thing for me has just been the joy of, you know, project-based learning and, you know, creating things together, learning together, but basically trying to use good pedagogy together. It's just fun. Like it's something that, you know, I want to do, the kids want to do. And it's going to be sad. I mean, my kids were, they were pretty sad that Spanish is going to be over and with Dr. Fryer. Cause I'm probably not going to teach, you know, foreign language again. And, you know, it's just, that is a very edifying thing, you know, when your kids are so excited.
Especially that particular group of students, because I had them in third grade, and they can be very challenging.
Well, there's a lot of challenging kids in that group. There is.
But I am so glad that, you know, the middle school years can be so difficult in so many different ways.
There's a lot of transitions.
And so I think it's really important for them to find a teacher. It's important. Imperative that they find a teacher that they can connect with. And so making those student connections is important.
One of the funny stories that happened just right before Christmas was some of my new trimester computer kids had said, hey, we heard your Spanish kids don't take any tests and they don't learn anything. And I said, well, that's interesting. Well, we do a lot of projects, and I bet if you will ask them about the things that they've learned, I think they've actually learned quite a bit, you know, this this year, but we're so conditioned with the traditional expectations.
You don't have a test, you must not have
learned anything. Mean I'm not having to memorize vocabulary? What do you mean we don't have a quiz? What do you mean we're not just doing a test? You're just doing projects? You think that's learning?
You're just having fun all the time?
Yeah, actually, we're learning a heck of a lot. And we've thought, like, it would be kind of interesting to do some kind of an assessment and kind of compare, you know, but we've done different vocabulary, but it's lovely that our measurement stick is not just, you know, what everybody's grade is. And, you know, it's, we've had a lot of freedom and a lot of flexibility. And especially in this pandemic, you know, that's been an important thing to have, is to have grace and to have flexibility, you know, because everyone's in different situations. That's right. Their families are in different situations.
And I think that's one thing we need to be supporting each other. Mm-hmm. You know, teachers need to support each other. Parents need, without the support of my parents and my students, you know, we would be in a very different place right now. Yeah. So I have a lot of gratitude for my school, for my parents, for my students in my class who have been so incredibly patient and supportive and forgiving, yeah. You know. And so that work environment is so important, and it definitely has made this year great in a lot of ways.
So where can people connect with you, Shelley? I know you've changed a little bit with some of your uses of social media, but where are you spending your time with social media? You're more on Facebook now with Seesaw, aren't you?
I am, but I'm definitely more in Facebook, but more in my, Seesaw, definitely, third grade, Seesaw Ambassador Group, Seesaw Certified Educators Group. I am just not on Twitter as much as I used to be at S. Fryer, that may come back later. It just depends, you know. I mean, it's a valuable group, but just maintaining contacts has been harder this year. But definitely doable.
And I'm W. Fryer on Twitter. My blog, speedofcreativity.org, where you're hopefully finding this, is where I am periodically sharing. And then I have my curriculum sharing site, which not only has the 5th and 6th grade media literacy lessons, but also our Spanish lessons that we've been doing. And that's a Google site that is a subdomain of our school. And you can find that at mdtech.cassady.org. So I will include in the show notes links to those places. And if you happen to listen to this, you can reach out to Shelley or I on Twitter. It's probably an easy way. Let us know, because you never know as you create something like this and you put it out there into the ether of the web, you know, who might end up listening to it, and especially all the way to the end, because I think it's going to be more than an hour. So Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year. Good luck and stay safe.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcasts are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.